For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
All right, good evening. So as we get ready to conclude Tainus Esther, getting ready for Purim, which will be here, I'd like to share with you, you're in for a little bit of a treat, a really magnificent piece from the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu of Vilna, who has a magnificent understanding of one of the more perplexing psukim in the Megillah. What I'd like to do is introduce a separate question, which was the official topic of tonight, and then we'll use his understanding of that complex verse, which we'll get to answer all that and tie it all beautifully together, and you'll hopefully have a new understanding of what it is that we're doing, reading the Megillah and on the Yontif of Purim. The question that we'll start with is the fact that we have two Adars this year. Which Adar do we celebrate Purim in? So the Adar, as you know, is the second Adar. There are actually two interesting sources for why that is. There's one major source in the Gemara, and then there's another source that Rashi says. And it says as follows. The Gemara says, "Mishkeshem shekeshenichnas Av mima'atin b'simcha." The same way, when the month of Av comes in, we decrease the amount of joy that we have. The month of the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It says the Gemara, the same way when Adar enters, marbin b'simcha, we increase the amount of joy that we have. Why is it that we increase our joy in Adar? What is it about Adar that requires of us to have a more joyous practice than we did before? Rashi comments, Yimei Nisim Hayu Yisrael. These are days of miracles, miraculous events for the Jewish people. What are the miraculous events that took place in Adar? The Purim story. That would be a logical explanation. Says Rashi as follows, Yimei Nisim Hayu Yisrael. Purim u'Pesach. The miraculous events which took place in Adar, which is why we increase our joy, are the Purim story together with the Pesach story. Well, the Pesach story didn't happen in Adar. That happened in Nisan. That's the next month. But Rashi connects the two. Rashi connects that Mishenichnas Adar Marvin B'Simcha, because it's a time of joy, it's a time of miraculous events, and we're celebrating those miraculous events. Which miraculous events? Purim, makes sense. But he throws Pesach in. Now Rashi is really sourced in another statement that the Gemara makes. The Mishnah actually says that when you have two Adars, the Gemara discusses which one should we celebrate Purim. So the Mishnah says, always the second one. Not the first, the second. The way the Mishnah discusses it, in the times of the Mishnah, they would actually add a month as time went on if they felt they needed it. So it could have been that Adar would come, you would celebrate Purim, and then a week later, they would add another Adar. We know in advance there are going to be two Adars. But in the times of the Mishnah, they would have an Adar, Purim, and then a week later, they would add another month. So the Mishnah wants to know, were you Yotzei Purim? You did it once. You went through the whole thing. Shalach Manos, Matanos of Yonim, the Sudo, you heard the Megillah twice, and now it's going to be Adar again. Do you need to do it again? Mishnah says yes. Because the Adar that is the real one has to be the one closest to Pesach. Smichas Geula LeGeula. We have to connect the redemption to the redemption, so that the redemption of Purim has to be directly connected to the redemption of Pesach, and that's the Adar that we choose to celebrate Purim as we're doing this year. And that's where Rashi sourced, and how does Rashi know that there's this idea of the two celebrations, Mishenichnas Adar Marvin B'Simcha? Because we see already the Mishnah says the Purim and Pesach go together. The question is, why Pesach preceded Purim historically by generations? 1,000 years, easy. Came first. And on the calendar year, it's Purim first. What's the connection between the Purim and the Pesach that it has to be one after another? You have to connect the two. Okay, we'll leave that question on the table. The connection between Purim and Pesach, and we'll introduce it through one of the more perplexing psukim in the Megillah. Now we'll get into the Megillah. Those of you who have your Chumash inside, you want to follow, take a look at the end of Perek Vav, the end of the sixth chapter. It's on page 1258. 1258. Now, because we're familiar with the story, we're going to jump around a little bit, and hopefully that'll be... So, the point of the story that we're jumping right into at the end of the sixth parak, the end of the sixth chapter, is Haman has just returned home after leading Mordechai through the streets. He has dressed Mordechai in the royal clothing, led him on a royal horse. He returns home and he is despondent with his head covered. In verse 13, and Haman tells his family of Kol Asher Karov, Ayisaper, Haman Lezera Shishol Kol Ayavav Kol Asher Karov. He tells them what took place and they say to him, Haman, who had previously left the night before on top of the world, he had come home and said, I was the only one invited to the party together with Esther and with Ahasuerus. It was just me, and then I saw that Mordechai character and he makes my blood boil. And they said to him at the end of the fifth chapter, no problem. Why don't you make gallows in your backyard? You'll tell the king to hang him and you'll be a happy man. And he does. And now he comes back after leading Mordechai through the streets. And they say to him, in Mizera HaYehudim, Mordechai Asher HaChilosel in Polifonov, if Mordechai before whom you have begun to fall is of Jewish descent, Lo Suchalo, you will not prevail upon him. It's over. Very strange pasuk. Chiddush. If Mordechai is a Jew, they say to him, forget it. Put a fork in it, we're done. Mordechai is a Jew, then it's over. We've known Mordechai's been a Jew since the very beginning. That's why Haman refused to knock out only Mordechai alone, but he needed to knock out the entire nation that came, the Am Mordechai. His family, when they described in the end of chapter 5, and they said, let's take Mordechai HaYehudi and put him on the gallows and hang him. There is no secret here. And now Haman comes home, and the wise response of his advisors and of his wife is, if Mordechai is a Jew, forget it. You're done. You're going to fall. You can't overcome him. Very perplexing. Why do they say that? What does that mean? To understand this is the Vilna Gaon is going to give us a brilliant insight into this. We're going to go back to the beginning of the sixth chapter. In the beginning of the sixth chapter, the king can't sleep. It's on page 1257. That night, Balayla Hahu Nadidosh Nas Hamelach. The king can't sleep. Why can't the king sleep? Why can't the king sleep? This is a famous part of the Megillah. The story begins to move at a much quicker pace. Why can't the king sleep? What did he say? So why can't he sleep? Okay. So Rashi tells us two explanations. First explanation, Rashi says, Neitzaya. It was a miraculous event. The orchestrations, the machinations that have to go into this story, God creates a scenario where Ahasuerus can't sleep. And what does he do when the king can't sleep? He brings his book of recollection to be read before him. Why is that the response when you can't sleep? Right? They didn't have television. So either you read the tax codes, or you read your book of remembrances. But either way, that'll put you to sleep. That, says Rashi, is interpretation number one of how we read the story. King can't sleep, miraculous event. It needed to be that way, because the story has to play itself out. What does the king do? Bring me that book. What story do they come across? Mordechai had saved the king with big son and such. Why did they come across that story? Miraculous. This is all part of the story. The same miraculous nature that kept the king awake, they happen to flip to that story. And the king wants to know, so what do we do for him? That's interpretation number one. Rashi has another interpretation. Says Rashi, you know why the king couldn't sleep? The king couldn't sleep because his mind is spinning. He can't figure something out. And what is it that he can't figure out? Can't figure out, what was Haman doing there? My wife invites me to a romantic dinner for two, and whoop, it's actually a romantic dinner for three. Why is he there? Says Rashi, he has concerns. Maybe Esther and Haman have something going on, and they're planning to knock me off. They're going to try to kill me. Says Rashi, no, Ahasuerus thought to himself, there's no way you can knock off the king and not have anybody know about it. There is no way you can pull that off and there aren't leaks along the way. Somebody knows about this. And whoever knows about it's not telling me. Why would nobody tell me that somebody's plotting to kill me? Rashi says, Ahasuerus thought, it must be somebody doesn't like me. Whoever it is that know about this, those people, they don't care to tell me because they don't care if I disappear. Why would it be that somebody wouldn't care if I disappear? It must be I've done, or someone's done something to me and I haven't repaid them. Bring me that book. We need to search for times where things have been done for me and I haven't repaid them in kind. So says Rashi, interpretation number two is, it wasn't a miraculous event that he couldn't sleep, it was because the king couldn't sleep, because he was troubled. And therefore he has the book brought before him on purpose. And they're looking for something specific. What are they looking for? Who do I owe? Which is why when they find the story of Mordechai, what's the king's first question? What do we do for? What a funny question to ask. If in the first interpretation, the simple interpretation that he just can't sleep, you know, why does he ask that question? So Rashi says there's more going on over here. He was looking for something. He was looking for who would know about this and would not care about me enough to tell me. It must be there's somebody out there that I owe and I haven't repaid and they're holding that grudge. Find it. Find him. So they're flipping through the book looking specifically for those types of instances. They find this story, well, we repaid him. They find that, we repaid him. Mordechai saved you, we never did anything for him. Oh, we need to take care of that. That's Rashi's interpretation. Where does Rashi get this from? That's what the king was thinking. Because the Gemara records, Esther was thinking something very specific when she invited Haman. Why did Esther invite Haman? Says the Gemara, to plant the seed in Achashverosh's head that there might be something going on between them. So Rashi says, now when the king can't sleep, it's because he picked up on that. He can't sleep. He wants to know who's done something for him. And now he asks, what did we repay Mordechai for? That's Rashi's approach. Put that on the shelf. We're going to go to the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon is a little different approach based on a similar concept, but he's going to take it in a very different way. Says the Vilna Gaon, king can't sleep for a different reason. It doesn't enter his mind. Now, it's true that Esther invited Haman to plant a seed, but it doesn't enter his mind. He's thinking, if Esther and Haman had something going on, I haven't seen Esther in 30 days. They could be anywhere in the world. They wouldn't come to my chambers and have a party together. He's not thinking that. Says the villain, but he's thinking something else. This is a strange party, says Achashverosh himself. Because how did this party begin? Esther comes into my chamber without having been called. She risked her life. She literally put her life on a platter and said, I need to talk to you. You're the king. You have a queen. She has everything in the world she could possibly want. Clothing, apartments, houses, cars, you name it. She's got it all. And she's risking her life for something. What in the world does she want? And who does she bring with her? Who's Haman? Second in command. She brings out the big guns. She wants something so enormous that it's worth risking her life and it's worth pulling out all the stops. So that the Vilna Gaon says in Achashverosh's mind, he can't sleep, but he has a totally different understanding of what's going on over here. Esther invited Haman for what reason? To plant a seed, that something's going on between the two of them. Says the Vilna Gaon, Achashverosh doesn't pick up on that. He sees something else. He's sitting there thinking, boy, these two are aligned together, Esther and Haman. They want something big, so big that she's willing to die for it and bring out the biggest gun in the estate for it. What could it be? So he comes to the party, says, half the kingdom will give it to you. What is it? And she says to him, don't worry about it. I'm not ready to talk about it. Just come back tomorrow. Did you hear this story before? You read the story? Come back tomorrow. I'll tell you tomorrow. The king can't sleep. He can't sleep. What? He comes to one conclusion, says the Vilna Gaon. There's only one person in the world that Esther would be willing to die for. Who's that? Mordechai. Now, nobody knows their relationship. Nobody knows that she's Jewish. But everybody knows she has no mother, no father, no nation. She's a nobody. She's an orphan. Who raised her? Mordechai. Whose home was she taken from when she was brought to the palace for the beauty pageant? From Mordechai's home. The king says to himself, there's only one person in the world that she could possibly care enough about to die for. Only one person who she would have to ask something for. It's got to be Mordechai. So she got Haman together with her. They're going to ask something for on Mordechai's behalf. That, says the Vilna Gaon, is the only conclusion that Ahasuerus could possibly have drawn. Now, no king wants to be in a position in which he's on the opposite side of good leverage. He doesn't want to do that. So he says, well, if they're coming with something major, they must think they have some claim or right to ask something. What has Mordechai done that would warrant them asking something so significant? So he calls for his book and he says, find me Mordechai. Not just a general flip through, I want to know who's done something for me. I want to know what Mordechai's ever done for me. And they flip through the book and they say, we found something. And he asks first question, what have we done? What did we do for him? And they say, nothing. The king says, oh, I'm going to take care of this because I don't want there to be any leverage tomorrow. When they come and at the party and they make this massive request, I want to make sure that I don't have to deal with anything. I want to take care of this so that it will be an even playing field. So when they make whatever request they make, I'll be able to respond and say yes, or I'll be able to respond no. So what should happen in verse 4? After the king in verse 3 asks, what do we do for him? And they say nothing. The king says in verse 4, what should the king say? What should happen in verse 4? Pasuk Daled, and he should say, go do something. I don't know what it would be. It would be, go take care of him. And instead, what happens in verse 4? Vayomer HaMelech mi vechotzer. Who's there? Haman shows up. Now, let's put into perspective what's taking place right now. There are a lot of different things. Esther invited Haman. Now, Esther has an agenda. Esther's agenda is to spare the Jewish people. But the way that she's going to do that is she's got to frame Haman. The way that she's got to do that is she's got to get Haman on the opposite side of Ahasuerus. So she plants the seed by inviting Haman to the party so the king will think that there's something going on. That's from Esther's perspective. From the king's perspective, he thinks they're aligned together, Esther and Haman. They're there to request something on behalf of Mordechai, and I'm going to take care of this before they actually show up again. Well, what about Haman's perspective? What's he thinking at the party? I'm important, nothing more. Who does he think invited him? No, the king, that's right. I always thought that until this afternoon when I saw a beautiful piece from the Meshech Chochma, who writes, if you look at the way that Esther invites the very first party, Esther said in verse 4 in chapter 5, Esther says, "Im al haMelech tov yavo haMelech veHaman hayom el haMishteh asher asisi lo." Let the king and Haman come to a party that I'm making for him. Who's the party for? Ahasuerus. And I want Haman to come. And the king says, "Go get Haman." When Haman's out in his chambers and someone knocks on his door, what do they say to Haman? The king has summoned you to a party. Haman thinks he's super important. The fact that Esther's there is totally normal. He doesn't think he was invited necessarily by Esther. The king is the one who went to fetch him. The next party, during that first party, when the king says, what do you want? She changes her tune. She no longer says to the party I'm making for him, for the king. She says, look, in verse 8, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I'll prepare for them. It's now gone from a party that I'm making for you, and I'm inviting Haman too, now it's a party for both of you. In her mind, she's just trying to plant seeds about there's something going on. But Haman just gets summoned by the royal court to come to a party. He thinks he's on top of the world. He leaves the party thinking he's literally on top of the world, and he sees Mordechai, and he can't stand it. He goes home, they say, make a gallows, let's hang him, we'll be done with this. He says, great idea. He can't even wait till the morning. He shows up in the middle of the night. What right does he have showing up in the middle of the night? What does he think he can accomplish? Anything he wants. Because the king just invited him and him alone. So he shows up in the middle of the night thinking, yeah, literally buddy-buddy. The king only invited me together with his wife. I want to knock off Mordechai. He shows up. Now, so at this moment, as the two of them are about to meet the king and Haman, the king's thinking, I got to get Mordechai repaid so that I don't have that leverage against me tomorrow night's party. Haman's coming saying, I got to get Mordechai killed because he's driving me nuts. Who speaks first? king speaks first. Verse 4. King said, who's in the court? Haman had just come. So the king's servants announced, it's Haman. And the king said, let him enter. When Haman came in, the king said to him, how would you repay somebody who you want to bestow honor to? Haman never opens up his mouth. The king is the first one to speak and says, well, what would you do? How would you bestow honor? Haman thinking, the king's now asking me what he would do to somebody he wants to honor. Could there possibly be anyone more than me? Of course not. So he goes through with his process of the horse, the royal clothing, have somebody significant parade him through town saying, this is how the king honors who he wants to honor. And the king responds and says, Maher! Quick! Mordechai has been unpaid for months and months and months. Maher! Now! Immediately! Take care of this! Why, right? Why? What's the hurry? Well, says Vilna Gaon, because he's got an agenda. The king's got to get this debt repaid before the party that afternoon, so that when they come and make this massive request that Esther's willing to die for, I don't have that hanging over my head. Hurry, he says to Haman, you are the greatest, you're the number two guy, you would be the best one to parade him through town, so that we could bestow honor. Haman knocks on Mordechai's door. Mordechai opens up in his sackcloth and mourning, tear-streaked face, crying on behalf of the Jewish people, fasting for 3 days. He hasn't eaten a thing in three consecutive days. What do you want? And Haman says, well, I need to put you in this royal clothing and put you on the royal horse and parade you through town. And Mordechai says, the decree is annulled? And Haman says, no, I'm going to slaughter you and your people on the 13th of Adar, like I said. What's with the royal garments? Haman says, I have no idea. Honestly, Mordechai, I have no idea. The king told me that he wants to honor you this way. Put them on. I'm not putting that on. You'll put that on by the king's decree. You're sure the decree is not annulled? No, Mordechai, I'm going to slaughter you on the 13th of Adar together with your family and the rest of the Jewish people. All right, Mordechai must say. Gets on the horse and he's paraded through town. Gets back to his house and he says, so really the decree is not annulled? And Haman says, no. I'm going to enjoy the slaughter all the more so now. Puts back his sackcloth and goes back to mourning. And Haman returns to his home. Despondent. After having just been through this. Stop the scene again. You're Haman's wife. His advisors. When was the last time you saw Haman? Right, the night before. Right now it's, I don't know, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He's just paraded him through town. The last time Haman was home was 3 o'clock in the morning the previous night, after you discussed the idea of making the gallows in your backyard, which he does. And then they say, in the morning you'll tell the king to hang Mordechai. And Haman leaves the house on top of the world, number 2 in the country, having been invited yesterday to the party, going again later this afternoon, on his way to get his nemesis killed. He's all excited. The next time you see him, again, there's no texting, there's no email, there's no nothing, you haven't had any contact with him. The next time you see him, he's leading Mordechai, and Mordechai's wearing royal clothing. What happened? What are you thinking as he walks in the door? What happened? Says the Vilna Gaon, what you're thinking is, he went to the king, he knocked on his door, and he said, I'd like to kill Mordechai. And the king said something like, why? And he said, well, because he's this, that, and the other. And the king must have said something like, I don't know, let me hear from Mordechai. And he brings Mordechai in, and the two of you had a debate, and who won? Mordechai won. Well, what happens when you come to the king with a plan to kill someone, and the king brings in that person and likes him better than you? You're finished. So Haman walks into his home, and he finds chaos. It's pandemonium broken out in his home. There's suitcases out, people are packing, they're getting ready to leave, there's stuff flying all over the place. And Haman walks in and he says, what is going on in here? And they say, what's going on in here? What do you mean, what's going on in here? You just lost to Mordechai. You're finished. We're finished. We're going to be hanged on the gallows. We got to get out of here. And Haman's response is, whoa, 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 wait, 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 wait a minute. No. Nothing happened like that at all. Why do you think? Oh, I know why you would think that. That's not what happened. Let me tell you, he says. You're not going to believe what happened. You're not going to believe it. He says, sit down. Just sit down. Put the suitcase down. Put it down. Just sit down for a minute. Let me explain to you. This is the craziest thing you've ever... You're never going to believe this. But I'm telling you, I was there. I know that it's true. And he says, look, I went to the king's palace. I knock on his door. He gives me entry, which I expected him to do because I'm number two guy in the country. I'm about to say, I want to come... I don't get the words out of my mouth. I don't even open my mouth. And the king says, how would you honor somebody? Wacky question out of left field. So I say, well, if I wanted to be honored, I'd have a horse and a cloak and the whole thing. And then he says, go do it to Mordechai. Can you believe it? Mordechai, I'm here to get Mordechai killed. And the king throws out of nowhere, go do this to Mordechai. What a wacky set of coincidences. Bizarre. So I say, really? He says, yeah. So I go to Mordechai. And Mordechai says, the annulment was decreed. And I say, no, Mordechai, I'm going to slaughter you and your family. He says, what's the deal with this? I say to him, I have no idea. Crazy instances are happening. Circumstances don't make any sense. So says Haman to his family. Pasuk says, "Vayisaper Haman lezeret eshto es kol asher karahu." He explained to them all that happened to him. Karahu is a catchword. Whenever you find it in Tanakh, Mikra. It happened. It just happened. And he says to them, "Bizarre! You never believe the circumstances of events." Which happened one after another, which would converge on this one evening in the middle of the night, which would result in me leading Mordechai. But I'm still number two. Mordechai's still a nobody. He and his people are going to be slaughtered. Don't worry about a thing. And his family responds, did you just say Mikre, Haman? Did you just say that there were these weird set of events which happened to coincide together, and they just worked out in this way that resulted in you leading Mordechai on the royal horse through town, and it was Mikra? It just happened? There's another place where we find the concept of Mikra. And it's with Amalek. Asher karcha baderech. We're going to read it Shabbos. Remember what Amalek did. Asher karcha baderech. Rashi says, derech mikre. They happened upon you. And Amalek stands for the concept, there's really no divine source guiding your life. Mikre, things happen. Things happen. When Mordechai tells Esther in Perek Dalet, and Esther, she's in sackcloth, and Esther sends for him and says, what's going on? Vayisaper Mordechai es kol asher karohu. He says the same phrase. All that happened to us, the Gemara darshins, ben bino shel mikre, the grandson of mikre happened to us. Amalek is attacking us. Amalek, which stands for mikre, they're upon us. Rashi says in Chumash they have another aspect. Lashon kar, they cool us off. We come out of Mitzrayim and we're hot with passion. We're excited. We're inspired. The world is afraid of us because we're steaming hot. And Amalek comes with their mikre, with their happenstance, with their chance, with their coincidences, and they cool everything off. And now Haman uses that same phrase to say to his family, don't be frightened. Don't pack your bags. Don't worry. It was mikre. You wouldn't believe the circumstances that all converged. And they respond, Imizera ha Yehudi Mordechai. If Mordechai is a Jew, Asher hachilosa linpol lefanav, that you've begun to fall, you're doomed. You think you're beginning to fall and it's just mikra? Those Jewish people don't deal with mikra that way. There's no such thing. Ein mazal Yisrael. We're above mikra. When mikra begins to happen to the Jewish people, and you're on the short end of the stick, Haman, it's time to call it quick. So it's not that they're adding, wow, if Mordechai's a Jew, it's over. We've known he's a Jew the whole story. That's why they wanted to kill him and his whole people. But it's when Haman says, don't worry about what's going on, it's only mikra, it just happened. Then they say, just happened to the Jews? Doesn't work that way, Haman. Lo suchalo. You can't overcome a people if you think your best defense is, it's just happenstance. They don't work that way. So we started with the Simcha of Purim has to be connected to Pesach. They have to go together. Rashi says when the Adar comes in, with the beginning of Adar, there's joy because of the holidays, the joyous, miraculous times of Adar. Purim, and he throws in Pesach. Pesach's not part of Adar. Same as Gemara says, you always have to have Adar connected to Purim. Pesach and Purim, Pesach and Purim. What's the connection? The Rosh Hashiva, the Tzar of Chaim Yaakov Goldbach, used to learn as follows. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, we left on fire. We left with passion. We left inspired. We left seeing the hand of Hashem in everything that we do. There were no doubts. It was Oz Yashir Moshe. It was clarity. And then we were attacked by Amalek. We were attacked Asher Karcha Baderach with a force that says, don't be so sure that that which is guiding you is the Ribono Shalom. Don't be so confident about that. There's mikra in life too, you know. There's probability, there are chances, things happen. And it cools you down. And Pesach was left with that cooled down element of what Amalek does, which Hashem says, remember always what they did, because I'll never be complete and my throne will never be complete as long as that force is still out there. And then comes Purim. And in the Golus, the first Golus the Jewish people experience where Hashem's faith is not with us, and things begin to happen. Strings are being pulled. All these types of machinations happen. And look, there's one way to look at it, which is Haman who says, Kol Asher Karo, let me tell you all that happened. You wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe these set of circumstances that happened. Bizarre. And we celebrate Purim in saying to Haman, just like his wife and advisors, Mizera HaYehudim, no such thing. Purim reconnects us to the passion, the excitement, the heat that we had coming out of Pesach, which was cooled by Amalek. The defeat of Amalek on Purim, the joy, the simcha, the sense of the Nahafahu, that which we think is one way, and Hashem is pulling the strings and it ends up the other way, is reigniting the fire that we had from Pesach. So the joy of Pesach is increased and expanded by understanding the Simcha of Purim. Shenichnas Adar, we're marbed the Simcha not only because of Purim, but because of what it does to what happened in Pesach, which we lost when Amalek attacks. When Amalek attacks and cools us down and introduces Mikra, comes along Purim and reestablishes it where we need it to be. And therefore the joy that we have on Purim, the Adar that Purim has to be celebrated, always has to be connected to the Geula of Pesach, because the Geula of Purim reignites that which we had, which we experienced originally in Pesach before Amalek came and cooled it down. And that which Haman says, Asher Karcha Baderach, Asher Ko Asher Karahu, all that happened to, he say, Haman, that's ridiculous. His own wife and advisors recognize, and that's what we celebrate. All of the different machinations that happen throughout the story to see the Yad Hashem guiding us through. Freilich and Purim.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.